So we're holding today on Daf Tzadi Dalet Amud Beit, right at the bottom, at the two dots, four lines up, where the Mishnah spoke about these various things that you would be chayav on, which was Godelet, Kochelet, Pokeset. She had different approaches to what Pokeset might mean. The other ones were pretty clear. So braiding the hair, putting on eyeshadow. Pokeset was either, according to Rashi, using combs to make like a part in the hair. Maybe it meant using a type of dough that they call mutpaks in order to make the skin red. We'll see from the Gemara. Tosis didn't like the pshat that it would be a soreket, that it would be using a hand or a comb, because we're going to see in the Gemara that the issue seems to be related to twisting the hairs. So let's see today what exactly were the malachas that we're referring to over here, because the Mishnah has not explained why there's this machlokas that I'll leave it to Rabbi Eliezer, you would actually be chayav v'chatas, whereas according to Chachamim, it would be osur, but only mitam shvus, midrabban. So godelet, kochetzet, kochelet, and pokeset, mishum maim v'chayvet. Om Rabbi Yavin, Om Rabbi Asi, Rabbi Chanina. Well, I would say that braiding the hair is similar to knitting material. So that would be like an oreget. A kochelet, where you're using an eye pencil, would be like writing with the pencil. And a pokeset, which, as Tosis points out, seems to be talking over here about twisting your hair with your fingers, that would be mishum toveh. So that would be similar to spinning. Amar Rabbana Kameh Rabbi Abo. What kind of weird shot was that? V'chi derech ariga b'kach, understand. I mean, it's a normal ariga, something that's attached to the hair, to the head, to turn it, what, you're going to turn it into a beged? I mean, why, how do you view that, according to Rabbi Eliezer, how do you view that as an actual told of the malacha? I mean, it may be vaguely similar, but certainly to call it chiyav chatas, and to say that using eyeshadow, what, just because you call it an eye pencil? So therefore you're saying, well, that's the way people write. Well, who writes like that? You're just trying to get some coloration around the eye. And twisting hairs? Well, that's called spinning. That's the way people spin to get a thread that's going to be like a permanent thread. Elam Rabbi Abu, that can't be the pshat. So, Lididimi Farshali Mineda Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina, I had a pshat from where I learned that it's like this. The kochelet is actually a problem that is similar to dying. So it's Mishum Tzoveah, because, I mean, certainly you can paint a skin, and it would be chayav mishum tzvi'a. So you could paint a human skin, and be chayav mishum tzvi'a. Godelet and pokeset, that's called a type of binyan. So you're building something. Building. That seems just as crazy as the other pshat. I mean, what are you going to call building up a hairdo? That's called building? Where do we ever find such a lashon? Absolutely, we do, as a matter of fact. Says the Gemara, Kedadosh, Rebbe Shimon ben Menasya. Take a look back in Gan Eden again, which is always the source of our real understanding of the nature of Malacha from Maisa Brias Olam, which, of course, the Mishkan is an expression of. Vayiven Hashem Elokim et HaTzelah. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu built the Tzelah that he took from Adam into a woman. And this drasha tells us Malami, Shekila HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'chava V'viyah Yitzel Adam. In what sense was it a building, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Chava a hairdo in order to make her beautiful? What, she's going to bring this ape with wild hair to Adam? What is he, Tarzan? So obviously, part of the mice of Bereshis was having a beautiful woman. So who's going to do the hairdo? It's got to be HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? So it must be that Kava Yochel, and we see that the Lashon there, that is coming to express the complete hachana of this woman to be roi as an Adam, is a hairdo that's called Vayiven. And indeed, he explains Rav Shimon ben Menasya, where do we find that this is actually in language, a way that people would refer to a hairdo? Because in Karchei Hayam, Hayu Koreim Lekli'ita Banyata. So they would call somebody who is a hairdresser, they would call the hairdresser a hair builder shop. So they actually openly refer to it in that way. And as we've seen, that many times the Shorashim in Lashon HaKodesh, we see this from the actual Kabbalah Satera, that the words were broken up into Shivim Lashonos, and that the way in which these etymologies go running around in people's brains, even though it seems far-fetched from the point of view of Balashut, of language analysis, but in terms of the roots in human psychology and evolution from which the building of language is actually comes, we find oftentimes that these very profound and strange insights are built into the nature of language. It's utterly shocking. So this would be the reason that actually the nature of the Malacha of Binyan is clearly seen on a primal level as including this type of Binyan. Tanya, in the Braisa, it says that Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says that a Godelet and Pocheset and a Kochelet, these are only considered to be an act of a Malacha when they are done by person A to person B, because these are, as are many of the Malachas, professional acts that need to be done in a very specific way. And if a woman does this for herself, it's never going to be as professional. And we find that all of the Malachot, if they're done in a way that is non-professional, when normally people are makbid to have them done in a professional fashion, that's not considered to be the Derech Malacha, and is Minoraisa Potter, and is only a Chiyuv Minorabbanan. So even there, where we would be makbid, according to Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Shimon Eliezer explains that this is only where she's doing it for somebody else. That actually Rabbi Eliezer also held that an isha lo tavir sraka upaneha mipneshet sova'at. There's another type of dying, similar to the kotevet, which is the sense of the kochelet, which is not kotevet with a pen, but is considered to be dying the skin around the eyes. She shouldn't use rouge, because if she uses rouge, she's also creating a dye, basically, on the skin. Some of it actually is difficult to take off. Tana Rabbana. Some other interesting interrelationships of the tolda to the av. Let's talk about somebody who milks an animal on Shabbos, or somebody who is mechabetz. Now, there's two ways of being mechabetz. A mechabetz means that you actually take the ways that separate the whey from the curd. There's two ways of doing that. You can do that using enzymes, or you could do that by letting the milk sit inside of a type of container that allows the whey to drip out. So after it coagulates, you put it into a strainer, and then the whey drips out, leaving behind a solid cheese. My wife actually does this every Pesach, where she makes her own cheese. So that's one way of doing it. The Rambam talks about using an enzyme. Rashi says you either approach a migabein. So the migabein would be someone who presses the curds, and by pressing them, you make them a block of cheese. So that would also be, we're going to see what this is. So all of these, because they are food, the shear of all of them would be the shear for food, which is grogeret. We're going to come back and talk about what it is that you did in all of these cases. Hamechabed, if you sweep the floor, now sweeping the floor in those times, remember, was a dirt floor, or mirabetz, again, on a dirt floor, you got to worry about the way that the dust comes off of the floor and it becomes chokingly difficult to breathe sometimes. So what they used to do is they would spray water over the floor just in order to settle the dust. Harode chalot dvash, somebody who takes out honeycombs out of a beehive, and he does this b'shogeg on Shabbos, then he would be chayev achatas. If he does this b'mezid on yontiv, then he would be chayev malchus arboim, because he was over on chilul yontiv. So says Rabbi Eliezer. Whereas the chachomim omrim, doesn't matter whether you're talking about any of these things, whether it's on Shabbos or yontiv, there's never a d'oraisa. The entire iser is only an iser mirabbanan mishum shvut. So it once happened that we tried to figure out what these things were. And Reb Nachman Baguria, he comes into Narada. So they were learning the sugya. So they asked him in Narada, what exactly is the chiyuv for milking on Shabbos? So he said, I don't know. I was taught that milking is a malacha mishum cholev. And mechabetz, What is that chiyuv? Mishum mechabetz. Uh-oh. And what about a megabein? Why are you chayev? Because you're being over on megabein. You know, it's like people today, they say, like, what am I being over? What do you mean, what are you being over? Everybody knows that's Osir on Shabbos. Now, this did not put him in a very good light. So they said to him, wow, I see you studied in a wonderful yeshiva. I imagine that your Rebbe was actually expert at cutting down reeds and swamps or some kind of very important job, because he sure didn't know anything about learning. So, Rabcha Koto Kani Ba'agmeyav, we see. Anyways, he was pretty embarrassed. So he went into the Beis HaMedrash to ask, so, you know, what's the deal? So, Omrule, so Atashal Be Medrash, Omrule, a Cholev is Chayev because of Mifarek. So, Mifarek is a Tolda of Dash. Dash would be in the same way over here. You're going the same way if you take grain out of the husk. Over here, you're taking milk out of a milk duct. And therefore, it's the same idea, basically, as disha. And that's mefarik. And that would be what you're over. As far as the mechabetz is concerned, so by actually straining the milk, whether you do it chemically or physically, you would be chayev because of borer, because you're separating out the curds, really, from the way of the milk. And if you're pressing it into a cheese, then you would be chayev mishum boneh, because you're building the cheese. Now, this Tosfos has an amazing, amazing question, according to this. If you're going to tell me that making cheese, you'd be chayev mishum boneh, so then if you are in need of the cheese on Yontif, right? So then on Yontif, you would be allowed to do something. Litzorech ochol nefesh. Now, if you hold of the concept of mitoch, mitoch means that mitoch shehutra, litzorech, hutra na mishelo litzorech, right? So you would never be over, according to this, on bone on Yontif. So then if that would be the case, then what would be wrong from building a house on Yontif if you wanted to eat in a house? Because as long as there's some kind of tzorach for Yontif, so then it should be mutter, you know? So it really should not be usur to even build, because you're extending the concept of building to ochol nefesh. But that means that there's a mitoch vis-a-vis an ochol nefesh. Then it should be mutter even not ochol nefesh, but for just for some kind of tzorach. You want to go into the house because it's cooler indoors. Should be mutter. Tosfos actually says it would be, except that the Rabbanan answered it because of Uvda the Chol of all things. Because it looks like you're doing things that you would only do if it isn't Yontif. Can you imagine? Because I mean, that's how serious you have to be about these concepts. If you're ready to bite the bullet and you want to say that making cheese is binyan, so then you're going to have to be mater actual binyan on Shabbos. Okay. I mean, not Shabbos, on Yontif. Very good. All right. So what can you do? But anyway, so getting back to the other part. Okay. Then we said somebody who's mechabed, mirabetz, rodech alodvash, shogag b'shabbos, chayev chatas, and hezid b'yomtev lo karboim, according to Rebbe Eliezer. Omer Rebbe Elazar. Again, we often find Rebbe Elazar is coming as the Amora to define the Tana Rebbe Eliezer's Svara, my time in Rebbe Eliezer, because we found that by Yonatan, when he took the staff he was holding and it dipped it into the Yarat HaDvash. Now, why would we call honey a forest? What's the connection of forests to honey? Elo lomar lecha, ma ya'ar hatolesh menu b'shabbat chayav chatat, af chalo dvash harodeh mimenu b'shabbat chayav chatat. So the same way that if you take something off of a tree, that's considered to be kotzer. The same thing would be true over here. You would be chayev achatas because you're detaching it from the honeycomb in which it grew. Now, this is a little bit weird because are we really talking about kotzer? I mean, it's not connected to the ground. It's a little bit strange to call that kotzer. Okay, we'll have to, again, when we go into these malachas, we'll have to go through how we're defining really the Isser of Rodan Shabbos. By the way, of course, this is not the way we would normally, this is a drasha. It's not normally the way that we would understand the pasuk over there with Yonatan and Shaul, where the pashtus is that he was going through this amazing, dripping forest of delicious figs that were dripping their honey onto the ground, which is what we're calling the Yarrow Dvash. We're not comparing it to the Dvash of bees in any way. Okay, now, a Maimar, we're talking about over here, that according to the Rabbanan, they say that if you spray down the floor with a spray bottle of water, so it would be Osir min Rabbanan. A Maimar was actually Matir spraying down floors in the town of Mechuzah. Because he said, look, time by my Omer Rabbanan, why did the Rabbanan even Osir the idea of spraying a floor? Because Dilma Atilashvuye Gumot, the only problem was that it's possible that some of it may end up getting wet enough to run, and then it will level the floor. And if you level the floor, then you're going to be over on Binyan, right? Because Ashuya Gumot, indoors is Binyan, remember, and outdoors is considered to be Harisha. In Mechuzah, we do not have to worry about something like that. Why? Because there are no Gumot in Mechuzah, because nobody in Mechuzah, which was there Beverly Hills, has dirt floors. Everybody's got tiled floors, and therefore there's no chashash whatsoever of washing the floor. Now, by the way, that's not so pushit. I say washing the floor just to bring up the issue, because as Tosis points out, the Beis HaMikdash also had no gumot. It was all covered with stone. Nonetheless, the Gemara says that the Kohanim used to wash off the floor in Yontev, Shelo Berotzen Chachomim, and they said, who is the Lo Berotzen Chachomim who's going on Libet Reb Eliezer? But if that's true, then it means that if you hold that it really, even if it's completely tiled, it's Otzers, then doesn't that run against this Psak in Mechuzah? So Tosfos suggests that there's actually a difference between washing a floor and spraying a floor. Because in washing the floor, the liquid will take whatever is with it into the area between the tiles. And very often you're missing grouting between the tiles, and it will fill up the grouting space, and therefore that itself would be considered to be binyan. Masha Enken, if you're just spraying, you don't get that kind of filler. So spraying may loosen it on a dirt floor to be able to get smoother, but it's not going to fill up the grout between tiles. So it's not necessarily true. Again, Bezrat Hashem will get to discuss all of these Piske Alokas Alokha Lamaisa, but it's not necessarily true that if you're Matir the Merabates, that you would be Matir necessarily a washdown. Rava Tosva, he once came along and he finds Ravina in absolute misery from allergies and from sitting around in this awful air, which is called Havla. Havla is like what we would call smog. So he's sitting over there because all of the dust has risen up from around the floor. It's all over the place. And some say it was Markashisha Beredarava that found Ravashi in pain, going nuts from this on Shabbos. So he said to him, Lo Sovel Amar Lo HaDetanya, I understand why you don't want to go straight out and spray it, because it's also on Shabbos to spray. But it says in a Braisa that if somebody is in a position that he wants to bring about the same result, in other words, he wants to be Merab Beitz et Beito, he wants to get the air without dust. So he wants to let the dust in the air, he wants to spray it down on the ground. So there's a way to do this without actually being over on the Issur d'Rabbanan b'Merabeitz. What you can do is you can actually bring your sink. And remember, those days, sinks were not connected to pipes. They were just things that you washed your hands in. So take a sink full of water, okay, and then wash your face in one side of the room, you know, and then wash your hands in another side of the room, and then wash your feet in another side of the room. Basically, by the time you finish washing, there's enough water that has fallen all around the place that the bias will be mitra beitz me'elav. It'll just turn out that it was merubatz, even though you didn't do it that way. So there, the point over here is that it's not that much of a chashash that you're going to actually be coming to be Mashva Gumas. It was something that Rabbanan asked her to do as an act of rebuts from a spray can. But that it should result from something that you're doing, that the Rabbanan never asked. So you could have done that. Omar le lavadatoi, which usually means, I forgot about the bride, I didn't think of it. Some suggest that in this case, maybe it means, as Rashi brings also, I don't hold of it. So usually we would say, lo shmiyali means I don't like it. Lavadatai always means it wasn't something I was thinking about. Tana, isha chachama, if a woman is smart enough and she has learned this halacha, she's heard this halacha, she can get away with essentially mirabetzet bita b'shabbat, because all she needs to do is the same kind of thing if she's going to wash the dishes, you know. So move around like they do, you know, places where you put the dishes into this roving wet container, you know, like they have in restaurants or in institutions. So wash the dishes in one corner, push the sink over, and then wash the forks in another corner and so on. And that way you'll end up being merabits to buy it. The truth is, however, none of this is nogei halacha l'maisa. Why? Because ha'ina desfirlan k'Rabbi Shimon, shorei afilu l'chatchila. Nowadays that we hold, as we said before, we paskin like Rabbi Shimon at a melacha that is an eino miskavin, as long as it's not a psik reisha, is mutter even lechatchila. So then, since your kavana over here is not to actually cause hashvuye gumot, so you're not going to really have in mind to do binyan, and it certainly is not necessarily the case that you will be mashve gumot, so there should be no iser even in going straight out and spraying the floor. And now, after a night of gargling and getting all ready, our Capitan is prepared for a massive introduction. Not bad, but was clearly just Jack Daniels and not Talisker. The right kind of preparation uses better stuff. So says the Mishnah, HaTolesh Miatzitz Nakuf. Now, we had an iser of tolesh. What about if you pluck something from a flower pot, okay? So then it depends. If the flower pot has a hole in it, which allows the moisture coming from the ground to actually be accessible by the plants, so then you would be chayev, because it's as if it's planted in the ground. But if the flower pot does not have a hole in it, it's she'eino nakuv, then it's not really the same as picking something from the ground. And there you would be putter. Whereas Rabbi Shimon says it makes no difference whether it's got a hole in it or doesn't have a hole in it. That is not looked at as the real katsira. Now, we had before, if you recall, the din of the gavshushit shel afar, according to which, you over there, remember, you had things growing on a piece of rock or ground, and then if you lift it up, you put it on top of your tedot, or you lift it off of your tedot, you put it back on the ground. The question over there was whether you were chayev. It came out from that sugya, and this is the way Rashi understood sugya over there, is that even if it's not on the ground, that there would still be a difference between an atzitz nakuv and an atzitz she'eino nakuv. So that even if just held over the ground, it's still considered to be mechuber to the ground, and it's still considered to be nourished. This is very, very nogei halacha l'maisa, also in terms of other things. Not, this is not only a Shabbos issue. This is all types of questions. How would you be kona it? Is it considered to be karka, or is it considered to be metaltalin? Would you be able to write a prusbel on it? Because you can only write a prusbel if you own karka. What if it's the karka is in a box, which is has a holes in it that allow nutrients from the ground to penetrate, and so on. So does it have to be literally attached to the ground? What does the ground mean? Does the ground mean your porch on the 53rd floor? Because the building is attached to the ground? Does it mean literally the ground? And it has to be even on a ground floor. It wouldn't be considered to be attached unless it was over the dirt. But if you covered it with tiles, it wouldn't be on the ground. Or how about if the flower pot was made out of a material which is porous? So suppose it's made out of klicheres, or suppose it's made out of wood. Would there be an issue of nakuva or ena nakuva? Or are there some type of materials, which is essentially why flower pots are made out of earthenware specifically, is that they are yonic and they will sweat out water and so on and take in water. These are all issues that need to be discussed in this very complex sugya. And it's also nogea, of course, shvias. You know, are you allowed to have these pots during Shemitah and work on them if they're on the 53rd floor? Or is it also to do it during Shemitah? Many, many sugyas. This is going to be nogea. Okay, so in any event, Lagabi Rabbi Shimon, note that the way Rabbi Shimon expresses himself is instead of saying Rabbi Shimon poter, he says Rabbi Shimon poter, bezeh ubezeh, and it's completely the same. Meaning there's no, I don't see any difference between them. I mean, all he needed to say is poter. But when he talks about bezeh ubezeh, he is specifically creating an equivalence between a pot with a hole and a pot without a hole. Now, that seems to say that he's calling it all the same thing across the board for any and all sugyas. Because otherwise, if he was only referring to the issue of Shabbos, he could have said so. He could have just said poter. So Rami Le'abai L'Rava, or some say it was Rechia Barav, who asked this problem to Rav, and pointed out that there seems to be a contradiction. And in our Mishnah, Rabbi Shimon goes out of his way to say, poter bezeh ubezeh, meaning apparently that according to Rabbi Shimon, a hole is precisely the same as not having a hole. There's no difference between the two sugyas whatsoever. And he's making it exactly the same. Problem is that he himself says that it's not exactly the same. Where does he say that? Ramino. Rabbi Shimon Omer, as far as I'm concerned, the only difference between an otzitz nakuv and an otzitz she'eno nakuv, now as soon as you see these words, you know you're in trouble, because that means that there is a difference between an otzitz nakuv and an otzitz she'eno nakuv. What is that difference? The difference is in terms of hechsher zroyim, right? So, although you need to have some kind of moisture on any type of foodstuff or seeds in order to make them roi l'kabel tuma, if that water or moisture, any of the shiva mashkin, falls on that oichlin, while, like he can stay for daf yomi naftali, it's about time. If it's something that is mechuber l'karka at the time, then it is not going to be mukshel kabel tuma. You can see how interested he is. It's a chait to send a child like this to school or to breakfast. So the question is, what if something is growing in a pot and you get water onto that thing while it's in the pot? Is it considered to be mukhub l'karka, in which case it will not be mukshur for Zeroyim, for the Kabbalah's tuma, or is it considered to be mukhub l'karka, in which case it will be mukshur to be Mekabel Tumah? This is the way to come to Daf Yomi Naftali. The only way to come. So, I agree, says Rabbi Shimon, that when it comes to Hechsher Zroim, there's a big difference. So if the Otzitz is Nokuv, it's considered to be Mechuber to the Karka, and it will not be Mukshel Mekabel Tumah. Now, wait a minute. So then why did Rabbi Shimon say, for everything, Lezuv, as far as I'm concerned, it's all one thing? It isn't all one thing. Very good point. Omar Le, so Rav, depending on who it was, answered him. No, it's a very good point, because I'll tell you what it is that Rabbi Shimon was saying. Rabbi Shimon is saying that any normal usage of the word mechuber would make no difference whether it has a hole or doesn't have a hole. It's not in the ground. And therefore, Rabbi Shimon would say it's definitely talush. But the Torah goes out of its way in the parsha of Hechsher Zroim to say something that doesn't make any sense. Take a look at that pasuk. The Torah is marba, additional tahara l'gabei Zroim, because it says these words, al kol zera zerua asher yizareah. Whoa, you're sort of beating on that word yizareah, right? So what is that telling me? It's telling me that the only thing that if mashkin, means it has to be in a normal state that you're now going to be zorea it. This is not a normal state to take something out that you're going to be zorea it when it's already in a pot that is on the ground. So then, therefore, the Torah is specifically saying that in this case, there is a difference. And unless it's Zera Zerua Asher Yizareya, then it would not be considered to be Tolosh. Okay? That's a special case. The Rabbanan, they go to town. I mean, as far as Rabbanan are concerned, everything there's a difference in. So whether it comes for me to be able to be kaina it b'mashicha, or I have to be kaina with a shtar or chazaka, a flower pot, my God, or whether I'm able to do work in it in Shemitah, or whether I can write a prizbal to cancel in the dinim of the debts being canceled on Shemitah, whatever. So when Rabbi Shimon said this Lashon, he said it for a very good reason, because there's a lot of things that he was saying it's all the same. Although he agrees, there is this particular case because of Gzeres HaKosov that it's different. How far would we go with this issue of saying it's exactly the same? I mean, I understand if it's in a pot, so it's in the pot, but suppose it's not literally in the pot. Suppose you've got the root, main root of this plant is directly over a hole in the bottom of the pot. So is he saying that the Kol Zera Asher Yizeirua would include even the overall context of the thing? Or is it the relationship of this particular plant to the ground? I mean, it's irrelevant that it's in a pot, isn't it? If the root's over the hole, there's no pot there where this thing is growing. So would he even say in that case that if the shorish is connected on nekev, what would Rabbi Shimon say about that? So Rabbi Zeret did not know. Ishtik v'lo amar lei v'lo midi, I really don't know. Now, at some other time, Zimna Choda Ashkeche, the same person found Rabbi Zeret saying over halacha, and the halacha went like this, that Rabbi Zera claimed that Rabbi Shimon was made, that if there was a big hole in this pot, which would have been enough from Maseches Kalim to have allowed it to no longer be Tameh, because now it would be considered to lose its din of the Kli, that's therefore no longer Tameh, even if it was or no longer Roy to be Bekabel Tameh if it was Tahar. He's made that in that case, it is certainly considered to be Bechub L'Karka. So this person, this Saba, which again, he's Saba, refers to Eliyahu HaNavi often, says to Rabbi Zera, what's with you, man? I once asked you what the din would be if you had the actual root right against the hole, and you said you don't know, you refused to answer me. Lo amarteli velo mine. And now, all of a sudden, it's so clear to you that because of the halachic description of the nature of the pot, the fact that there actually was not a place where it was against the ground was enough for you to say, for sure, it would be considered to be not in a pot. In other words, you have made up your mind that you know that according to Rabbi Shimon, it's the status of the pot that is definitive. I don't understand. If you were misupik in that case, why aren't you misupik about here where you don't even have any access to the ground? Omra Abaye, I don't know. It must be, you know, what really happens like this. If Rabbi Zera was talking about this statement that you claim that he made over here, I mean, he must said it like this, that Meida Rabbi Shimon Im Nikev Lamata Mirvi'it. So if it was, the hole was so bad that it's at this point in the flower pot that you wouldn't be able to even hold a revius, then it's Bechalal not considered to be a kli, in which case all of the, it's not the particular shoresh, all of the shoreshim are considered to be part of the ground. And that would make sense because then it doesn't have a din bichlal of a kli. It's just a gistra, and a gistra might as well be ground. It's just broken pieces. That may be what he said. Omar Rava, just to remind you of all of our limud in Maseches Kalim, let's put it all together for you, says Rava. And there's five different stages that you need to define when you're talking about a Kli Cheres. In reality, there are six, and Tosfos is bothered by the question of why it says five, as we'll see. So these are the midas of Kli Cheres. So if you're talking about a case where there's a tiny hole, enough that if there is a liquid inside of this container, that the pressure of the liquid will cause it to drip out. That type of thing is only nogea gistra. Remember that a gistra is a broken piece of pottery that is usable for putting under something else that has a hole in it to stop it or to keep it even. So that gistera, once it gets any hole whatsoever in it, even the tiniest hole, forget it. I'm not going to start worrying about whether I should keep a broken piece to be useful for some other thing if I need to bring another broken piece to fix that broken piece. That's ridiculous. And that's called, remember, as we had many times, ein mevi in gistra la gistra. So once something has even the tiniest hole in it, it's no longer considered to be usable and therefore will not be mikabel tuma, even if you set it aside as a gistra would be bot la daite. The next stage is, but it's still considered to be a kli for any other purpose, even to be a kli for using for the Porah Aduma, wherever this says Mayim Chayim El Keli, this is a perfectly usable kli, and therefore it will still be a kli vis-a-vis Lekadesh Bo Mechata, certainly Legabe Kabbalah's Tuma. Now, if it's got a slightly larger hole, which will allow, if you put it down on a wet surface, will allow liquid to seep in through the hole, then it's no longer considered to be a kli vis-a-vis the Porah Aduma, and it's Torah Melekadesh Bo Mechatat. However, it is still considered to be a kli in terms of allowing Hechsher Zroim, because this is not a big enough hole to be considered to be an Otzitz Nakov that is not Mechuber, that is Mechuber to the ground. It's still not Mechuber to the ground, and therefore it will be Mekabel Hechsher, because it's not growing on the ground. Fine. Now, once it gets a hole that is big enough for a small root to go through, then vis-a-vis this halacha of being connected to the ground for plants that are planted in it, if you're growing tomatoes in it, then at that point the tomatoes would be considered to be b'chub l'karka and will not be able to be b'kabel heksher. But it's still considered to be a kli in terms of Kabbalah's tuma as long as it holds olives. Remember, olive was the normal shear, kamotzi zayit. Once it has a big enough hole that even olives that you put in it could fall out of the hole, then it's no longer a normal kli to be mekabel tuma at all, unless it was a kli that you had set aside for use with things like pomegranates, which over there, even if it has big enough holes that olives could fall out, it's still a decent fruit-serving dish for things like apples and pomegranates and so on, which is motzi rimon, and that was the kol shirei balei batim. If it was miyuchad for rimon from the beginning, or now you change it for rimonim, it now is going to be mekabel tuma for rimonim. Nikev kamotzi rimonim, at this point, it's tahor from anything, and there Tosus points out that's not really true, because it isn't tahor from anything, it's now roy to be a gistera. And we talked about gistera before. We only said enivim gistera la gistera. So really, it should be six different shiurim that we're talking about for kli cheres. And this is not really accurate. Maybe what it means is that in terms of the normal use as a kli, and we're not including the gistera in that. So, but he says that it could be, and this is not true according to all the Rishonim, not even according to Rashi, but the Rashba here that Tosis brings is Mechadesh, that if it only has a hole the size of Rimonim, but it is not shattered into pieces, it is not Tamei Mishum Gistra. Gistra refers specifically to something that's broken completely, so then you get little pieces that are usable. But if you've got a whole kli that's got this big gaping hole in it, what are you going to do with it? That's not called a gistra. That's just junk. It's useless. So the Rashba wants to say that that's what you see from over here, that in order of usages, there's really only five shiurim. Okay. Anyway, this was what Rava came along to say. And Rav Asi said, well, I don't know. I heard, shamati kli cheres ishiuro kemotzi rimon. What I heard was that it's actually a din in rimonim and not in zeitim. Amalei Rava, shemalo shamata la b'mukaf tzamid patil. Maybe what you yourself were talking about was in a case where it's in an oil hamet. So over there, it says that the Torah speaks about that if it was anal mutsamit batil, as we've had many times, a tight-fitting cover, so the tight-fitting cover will prevent the tumah from being nichnas to tocho, and only tocho is tameh. But since the Torah stresses the cover over the normal opening, it also tells us that tumah in an ohel hamet does not penetrate through holes. And therefore, says Rava, maybe that's what you heard, is that it's considered to still be a kli, and the Kabbalah Satumah would have to be through its opening. And therefore, if you covered its opening, then if it has a hole in the side, the size of a zayit, the tumah won't go in until it becomes big enough for Yitziat Rimonim. Maybe that's what you heard. What? How could Rav have said that? Rav doesn't even hold that that's true. For Rav, who the Omar Muk of Tzomit Patil, is never going to allow Tuma in, no matter how big that hole is, Achi Yipachet Rubo, unless most of it has been smashed. So how could he say over here, if it had a hole, Kamotzi Rimon, that it would be Makabal Tuma in an Oel Amet? Lokasha, says the Gemara, one is talking about large Kalim of Cheres, and one is talking about small. Now, Tosus's pshat seems muchrach in this sugya, in which large and small are very well defined, namely, whichever comes first, Rov or the Godel of a Rimon. Perfect. So if it's a very large kli, where the size of a rimon is not yet rov, nonetheless, their rava would be maida. Where did rava say it's not going to be makabel tumah? Where it's talking about something that is not going to be the size of a rimon at the point that it reaches rov. That's all. Rashi just says it makes a difference whether it's big or small, which, as Tosis points out, you can't use those words. Big or small have no meaning. Relative to what? So Tosis is shot, therefore it's built in to understanding it.